This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. Today we're in Paris.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in a very busy, bustling Parisian cafe not far from the Place de la Concorde, staying out of the rain, Richard.
It's miserable, isn't it? We arrived just in time to see the end of La Course, the women's race. Luckily, we thought we wouldn't make it, but we made pretty good progress coming up the road into Paris today. And I saw the end of a very rainy race, lots of crashes. The men have started extremely gingerly, so gingerly that I fear for my Eurostar.
Well, yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to stay till the end, Richard, because they have covered 10 kilometres in about half an hour, 40 minutes, nearly 40 minutes. They're going very slowly. The real thing here, the Champs-Élysées is wet, so they're going to take the times for the general classification the first time they cross the finish line. And then I suggest it's going to be more of a procession and then a sort of sprint at the end for those who want to risk their... Well, take some risks, really, because the wet cobbles are going to be very, very slippery.
Well, as I mentioned, we saw the very end of the women's race. There were a lot of crashes. The field was much reduced. I think there were about 45 riders left on the final lap. Anna van der Breggen escaped the Rabobank Live rider, or Rabo Live rider. Quite unusual to get away on your own on the Champs-Élysées, but she did. She got away with about 5 kilometres to go, I think, and won the race. Just Yolene Dore, the Wiggle Honda rider, won the bunch sprint for second. And afterwards, I spoke to Yolene Dore's teammate, Annette Edmondson, the Australian rider. It was her first experience of riding La Course, and here's what she had to say. To be racing on the Champs-Élysées, you know, and be part of the Tour de France is obviously quite a thrill. Not the best weather today, but how was the race and how was the sort of atmosphere around it?
It was crazy. Last year I was actually at the Commonwealth Games, so I missed out on this. So this is my first time, and I'm just blown away by the crowds. And yeah, Wiggle Honda gave it everything out there. We had to cover a lot of moves, and we had a lot of problems with crashes and people trying to get back in. And so we had limited numbers for a while, but we gave it everything we could. And Yolene did a brilliant job to win the bunch kick for second. It's like as soon as you finish, you kind of chat it over, and then all of a sudden you look around and you're just surrounded by people cheering for you, and cheering for a women's race, which isn't as common as it may sound. Like it's still growing, and hopefully one day we can eventually have a tour for ourselves, but baby steps.
This is a step in the right direction.
Absolutely, it's the best thing you can do. Utilize all the crowds, utilize the setup, everything's here. So it's
lived up to expectations for you.
Absolutely, yeah.
Despite the weather. Can you tell me what happened in the race? We saw Anna van der Breggen got away on the last lap. Did you see her go? Because Yolene won the bunch sprint. You'd be pleased with second, but I guess it's a case of what might have been as well.
Yeah, to be honest, we didn't see it because we were a little bit too far back. And when it's raining, it's hard to see because you're concentrating on the wheel in front. You've got water going in your eyes because a lot of the time there's no point wearing glasses. So it wasn't... until about 5k to go that we saw it, and then it becomes a bit of a gamble. It's like, do we do all the work to bring it back, or do we try and use the other teams as well? And in the end we ran out of numbers up the front because everyone used everything they had, and Yolene managed to follow the wheels and did a brilliant job to sprint to second. So
great. So this is your first experience at Champs-Élysées, but you'll be back, you hope, next year. And you know, you're talking about baby steps, but when would you like to see this expanded into more than a one-day event?
Oh, as soon as possible. I think it'd be brilliant for the sport just to, maybe to add a couple of stages in next year. And I also think, don't use the entire length, same length as the men, but, maybe use the last 100 kilometres, 120k or so, for a few of the stages leading in to maybe to the Champs-Élysées. I don't know. Just trial and error, I guess, and they trialled it last year, it was a success, it's back again, so hopefully they'll enjoy the action today and expand it for next year.
So we heard from Annette Edmondson there after the women's race. We're going to, quite early in tonight's podcast, do our thank yous. Normally save these for the end, but since it's our last podcast, we want to give the following a very special thank you. First and foremost to Jaguar, who sponsored the podcast for the second year. And it's really thanks to them that Kilometre Zero came about. It was our concept, but they were very keen to do something in addition to the regular podcast. And together we hatched the idea for Kilometre Zero. But without Jaguar supporting the podcast, we wouldn't have been able to bring you one, never mind two, podcasts a day during this tour. So thank you very much to Jaguar. Thanks to British Eurosport, who sponsored our Pedalar de Charme competition, which was a great success. Hopefully repeat that next year. Thank you to The Telegraph, our media partners, John McCleary in particular, Adam Sills, Tom Carey. Thank you to 13 Senses, who supplied the music for Kilometre Zero. Thank you to our producers, John Mooney, Paul Scoynes, James Wickham, Alex Adey and Jonathan Rowe. They've all done a fantastic job. Thanks to Nigel Brown. Thanks to Brand Rapport. And Lionel, can you thank our regular contributors as well?
Of course, Francois Thomazeau. Big thanks to him. He's added a French flavour to the podcast. And the irrepressible, the incomparable Ciro Scognamiglio of La Gazzetta dello Sport. What would the podcast be without him?
Ciro bumped into a listener in Grenoble last night in a restaurant. Someone came up to him and said, I listened to the podcast. Are you Ciro? He said, yes, I am. And I just spoke to Ciro. He said that this listener was the happiest person in the world to meet Ciro. And I can well believe it.
Absolutely. We also ought to thank everyone at ASO, particularly Christian Prudhomme, the main man of ASO, who gave Daniel an excellent interview for our final Kilometre Zero episode on Friday. And also all of the staff in the press room, kind of led by Fabrice Tiano. Big thanks to them, always very helpful. And Seb Piquet, the voice of the tour, Race Radio. Big thanks to him too. But last and most significantly, I guess, a big thanks to all our listeners, everybody who's tuned in, whether you've tuned in once or every day. It's great to have you along on the journey. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you, if you've discovered the cycling podcast for the first time, you'll stick with us through the rest of the cycling season, the rest of the year.
Thanks. We've had a really good tour, and we've got really exciting plans for next year. I think we've been talking about that a lot, and what we'll do next year. We want to make it better all the time. We want to try and improve it. There are things we can improve, things we can do better, and we want to keep on improving. I think it's progressed every year since we started in 2013. What's the final listener figure for? Well, not it's not the final listener figure, but what are we at for the tour?
For the whole of the tour, we went through the 1.75 million. Listens barrier, so 1.75 million listens. Extraordinary numbers, really incredible. I mean, blown us away, particularly the popularity of Kilometre Zero, which has been very gratifying.
And more popular than the regular show.
In some cases, yeah, more popular than the regular show. And I think that's that's really encouraging for the future, because I think the format worked pretty well, and we're looking forward to. I certainly really enjoyed making those episodes. I think you and Daniel did as well, and hopefully we'll do a lot more of those in the future.
We're running a competition, of course, at this tour for friends of the podcast, old and new. A lot of you signed up before the tour started, and one of those old friends, so to speak, will win a bundle of swag, books by myself, Lionel and Daniel, and a The Tour is the Tour t-shirt. And then one of our new friends is also going to win one of those bundles, and we'll announce the winners later on in this podcast. Meanwhile, Daniel, we are among the team buses.
Daniel, it's really getting to you, isn't it?
Did I say Daniel?
Yeah, you said meanwhile, Daniel, and the tape will reflect that. You definitely did. I'm Lionel. We're in Paris. It's very un-Parisian feeling here. It's damp, cold, windy. It doesn't feel like the final day of the Tour de France. I've not experienced a wet Champs-Élysées at the end of the tour before. I think the last one was 1998. That was the last time it rained on the final day, I believe. It's not dampening spirits so much, but it does raise the question of what the riders are going to do when they reach the Champs-Élysées. I think the general classification time will be taken the first time through the finish line. But as you said, Richard, there are so many teams in this race that have not won a stage and have not really taken away an awful lot, that it's very hard to imagine the race actually being neutralised. But you might see the peloton split into big groups, with the GC favourites knowing that they can't lose any time, just sitting up and rolling around for 10 laps or however many laps it is, while a select few who want to salvage something from the tour or sense an opportunity risk their necks on the cobbles.
Sorry, Lionel, I was just thinking of Daniel there. I zoned out again. We almost saw the yellow jersey being taken down by Richie Porte. They were posing for the traditional line up, the Team Sky riders, where they all take their hands off the bars and put their arms in the air. I'm not sure Richie Porte can cycle without any hands, on the evidence of his wobble when he took his hands from the bars.
He can't cycle without any hands?
You he can't no cycle hand. No-handed. Sorry, my brain's not working today.
Me neither.
It's been a long tour. He can't cycle no-handed.
That the evidence does point in that direction, yeah. That would have been extraordinary, wouldn't it? Chris Froome, if he'd been pulled down on the deck. Quintana.
Hey, it's happened. Greg LeMond crashed in the yellow jersey on the way to the Champs-Élysées in 1986. Not once, but twice, I believe.
Right, yeah, that rings a bell, yeah. We could have seen Quintana and Valverde off the front, 2 minutes up, Sky chasing frantically.
Nibali would have attacked, wouldn't he? He'd have been straight off the front.
Nibali would have been off the front, absolutely, yeah.
Right, listen, Lionel, let's wander in the buses. Let's just go team by team and give them a mark out of 10, shall we?
Really?
There's BMC and Europe Car. Oh. Well, Europe Car, bless them. They finished with the full complement of riders, but...
And I think 1.5.
1.5 out of 10, yeah, they've had a poor tour, haven't they?
Roll on salvaging it, so let's say 2. 2 out of 10.
BMC?
7. No, hang on a minute.
They won a stage. Greg Van Avermaet won a stage.
Rowan Dennis won a stage, had the yellow jersey, and they won
Seemed,
a
stage. Was that this tour that Rowan Dennis won a stage?
Team of the tour, 9. 9 out of 10.
What?
3 stage wins and
that's
and
pretty impressive. Jersey. Yeah, that's
eight,
pretty impressive.
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. This Katusha.
Well, Rodriguez won 2 stages, so that's a solid 7, isn't it?
Perhaps 7. They also had a man sent home for testing positive for cocaine. Did they lose a mark for that?
6.5.
6.5. AG2R La Mondiale.
Oh, 8.
8, okay. Yeah, that doesn't need any explanation. Couple of stage wins.
Yeah.
Good attacking, aggressive race. Poor old Romain Bardet has the humiliation today. I incorrectly, in last night's podcast, said that Nairo Quintana would wear the polka dot jersey because it's deemed to be a more important, more prestigious competition than the young riders competition for which there's a white jersey. But, of course, he wears a white jersey by virtue of the fact that he is actually the winner of that competition. And so the polka dot, he's second in the polka dot jersey competition to Chris Froome. So the polka dot jersey is being worn by Romain Bardet, which seems unfair. He's no chance of claiming it back officially today, so he's just wearing it into Paris, keeping it warm. I don't think anybody should wear it. Or Jonathan Rowe, our producer, earlier on suggested that Chris Froome should wear a yellow jersey with red polka dots on it.
Yeah, that sartorial no-no, that would be awful. That would be absolutely awful. But yeah, it's definitely, as I said, I stand by my comments yesterday. The King of the Mountains competition needs a revamp.
Tinkoff Saxo.
Against expectations, which were higher on the GC, you'd have to say 7.5. But really, Peter Sagan has been, I think, the man of the race. So 8.5.
8.5 for effort. Funny how it's just you awarding points out of 10.
Let's switch it round. Okay, Team Lotto NL Jumbo.
Well, they've had a very, very poor season. They would have loved a stage win here. You don't feel it's the team that it, you know, that's the old Rabobank team, Belkin, always been quite a strong team. I feel it's a diminished team. They would have loved a stage win, but Robert Hessink has ridden very well into 6 overall. I will give them 6.5.
Etics Quickstep.
Lotto Jumbo, I should also add, the other team that finished with a full complement of riders. Etics Quickstep, 8. Several stage wins, good rides all round. Tony Martin, Zdenek Stibar, Mark Cavendish, yep, and a spell in the yellow jersey, 8. Okay, Lionel, your turn again. Giant Alpecin, tricky one that.
I would say 7 as a result of Simon Getschke's stage win. That was one of the best stages of the race. Real great race that day, but they will be slightly disappointed. You know, Tom Dumoulin didn't win the opening time trial, which he was hotly fancied to do on home soil in the Netherlands. John Degenkolb, unless he pulls it off this afternoon, maybe add an extra point if Degenkolb wins on the Champs-Élysées.
He shaved off his facial hair, John Degenkolb, and I don't feel he's been the same rider ever since. Cofidis parked almost not in the official paddock off to the side. That seems kind of appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, once Nasser Buhani was out of the race, they really lost their mojo. I mean, really, as bad as Europe Car. But worse than Europe Car.
Worse. They've been far less visible than Europe Car. Yeah. Europe Car have been in getting breaks and so on, but Cofidis have just been Cofidis disappointing, as you would say, Lionel. Yeah. Bretagne Séché.
They were in the breaks a lot at the start, weren't they? Mm. So, you know, as a wild card team, very difficult for them. I'd say 4.
We forgot to give a mark to Cofidis, didn't we?
1. I said 1.
1. Okay, Orica Green Edge, we've just almost passed.
Well, because of the horrendous luck they had in the first week, you've got to add a point for sort of sympathy, really. And Adam and Simon Yates really did as much as they possibly could. particularly Simon Yates's case, he was ill and was fighting against the odds. They've battled with sort of Aussie grit, really. Aussie and Berry grit. So, six.
MTN Quebec up, 11.
Oh, I mean, the team of the race for me because of, you know, the fact they're a wild card, the fact that their race calendar isn't necessarily as packed with all the World Tour races from start to finish of the season. They're new to the Tour. They've won a stage. Daniel Tekelheimen did really well, you know, aggressive, showed no fear. Against their sort of stature, you'd have to say eight or nine.
Oh, I think you'd say 10. I don't really know what more. They got a stage win. I don't know if you mentioned that. They got Cummings.
You really need to stop zoning out.
I'm just focused on the bigger picture here, Lionel. There's a lot to take in. Here's Fran Miller walking towards us from Team Sky. Fran Miller, we're recording our podcast. Now, Fran, you were promoted on the eve of the Tour. What's your new job title?
Director of Business Operations.
What was your old title again, just so that we can have a little snigger at that?
Don't pretend that you don't remember it. Head of Winning Behaviour.
That's right. So the
not
new...
something you'd be familiar with, to be honest, Richard.
So the new job title, Fran, is a reflection of... I mean, you're basically running the business side of the team.
Yes, exactly. So everything that's not involving racing and training in terms of logistics or anything like that, but I do everything else.
And you have not been on the Tour, but you've come out from Paris, obviously. How's it?
I'm a glory hunter.
Yeah, you've won the Tour with Chris Froome, although he was almost
taken. And
Bradley Wiggins. Yeah, not this year, though.
3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, Froome was almost taken out by Richie Porte a moment or so ago. I don't know if you saw that, but
no, I didn't.
They were doing the celebration, all hands off the bars. Poor old Richie Porte, clearly not very good at riding no-handed. Front wheel wobbled, almost took Froome down, almost a broken collarbone.
Well, it didn't happen, though, did it?
No, well,
that wouldn't have been very winning behaviour,
would it? Anyway, Fran, has it been a good? I mean, there's been let's be serious for a moment. There has been a lot of negative publicity around Froome and Team Sky. How has that affected the narrative back home? The story as it's been told back home.
I think it's I have to take this. Sorry, Richard. Hey, Carsten.
Unbelievable, eh? What a snub. She's just buying a bit of time, isn't she?
Yeah, I think so. Just formulating her answer in her head whilst pretending to talk to somebody else.
She's got a special button on her phone that she can press and it starts ringing like that spontaneously.
Okay, bye. I need to go. Sorry.
Well, can you give us a 1 minute answer to that question?
Yeah, what was it?
Just how has the story played out back home with all the crap that's been going on?
To be honest, I think it's really easy to allow Twitter to dictate what you think is happening in the real world. I actually think the majority of cycling fans are really happy and, you know, fantastically excited to see Chris win, see Team Sky win again. I think it's inevitable that there's questions and, you know, people are suspect and want to know how we're doing it and how we're getting these performances, and I think it's going to be a matter of time before that goes away. So I think it's an inevitable narrative that we've just got to live with, and hopefully today and the papers tomorrow will be about a fantastic sporting achievement, not about the history of the sport.
Right, Fran, you have to pop off, but I remember in 2012 you had to rush from here to London for the London Olympics. Will there be a proper celebration tonight in Paris?
I think there will be, but apparently it's Geraint Thomas's stag do on Wednesday, so I think the lads are putting it in the bank for that, because 3 days on G's stag do is not going to be a quiet 3 days. So yeah.
Okay, Fran, we'll let you go.
Nice one.
We're going around the teams awarding marks out of 10, so we'll get to you soon. Right, in the meantime, we're at I Am Yam Cycling. Lionel?
Matthias Frank, I think finished 7th, so 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. Lamprey.
Won a stage. Not too shabby. Ruben Plaza won the stage into Gap. Beyond real expectations, particularly once Rui Costa had gone home. So, yeah, another 7, I think. 6. Okay. No, 6.5.
Follow us on Twitter at cycling_podcast or on our website, thecyclingpodcast.com.
Right, Lionel, we are now at the Lotto Soudal bus.
A very good tour. André Greipel, 3 stage wins. Tony Gallopin, very active, very visible in the first part of the race. Blew up a bit in the mountains, but a good 8 for Lotto Soudal. And that would go up if Greipel wins his 4th stage on the Champs-Élysées.
Bora.
Unlucky for Bora, really. Finished with the fewest riders in the race. Didn't really do much. Didn't really animate the brakes. I'd say a difficult 4 for them.
Let's turn it round. Trek, I'll say. I mean, they had the yellow jersey with Fabian Cancellara 6.5. I think they need somebody else there. They need another. There's rumours of Mark Cavendish possibly going to train. I think that would possibly be a good signing for them. Balcom Mollema deserves a mention for riding solidly into the top 10. FDJ, 8, I think, for effort. Thibaut Pinot had a very difficult start to the race, but really showed great courage, great resilience to bounce back with a fantastic stage win on Alpe d'Huez. That was wonderful. One of the highlights of the tour, I think. Astana, very disappointing Astana. I mean, obviously a stage win at La Tussuire with Vincenzo Nibali, but yeah, I mean, poor.
That's the least they really could have expected. I mean, really, again, considering their resources, a real 6 out of 10 of a tour for them. Movistar, Rich?
Movistar, I will award Movistar 8.5. I thought they rode pretty well, although they didn't win a stage, did they?
No, they didn't. But then their two best riders were in a position where they were such a threat overall that they weren't going to get away. And because of the short, as we talked about in the podcast, the short final two mountain stages made it more difficult, really, for the GC top heavyweights to actually get up the road and win those two stages.
Yeah, two men on the podium. You can't really argue with that, can you? And I thought tactically they rode pretty well. Winner Anacona on Alpe d'Huez was absolutely outstanding, helping Nairo Quintana. We're at the final two teams, unless some haven't arrived yet. I can't remember at this stage. I think we're Cannondale Garmin.
They really tried hard, but results-wise, you expect much more from them. It's in terms of results, only really a 3. But let's give them an extra point for really going down with a fight. They did try extremely hard with several different riders: Talansky, Heyerdahl, Dan Martin.
It's getting a bit windy, Lionel. We actually last night on last night's podcast on Alpe d'Huez, I don't think we paid enough attention to the great battle for the stage between Pino and Ryder Heyerdahl. We were
too
talking
busy,
about lots
too
of
busy things. Squabbling about the King of the Mountains jersey.
Yeah. So okay, finally we're at Team Sky. They won the tour. So is that an automatic 10?
I think it has to be, doesn't it? They barely put a foot wrong all race. They wobbled a little bit in the last 2 days in the mountains, but you know that was the cumulative effect of leading the race for so long.
I think we were talking last night about how they'd use their resources very sensibly. It was never the same guys in the same order. I know I heard today of a story in the I think a column that Stephen Roach has written about his son Nicholas Roach, who rides for the team, and he's certainly not played his normal role. He was asked to put on a couple of kilos before the tour because he came here in a very different sort of role. They needed more engines on the flat roads to do the sort of donkey work, and he did a lot of that with Luke Rowe and Ian Stannard, which I think is partly owed to his form as well. But in the mountains, you know, it was Wout Poels or Richie Porte or Geraint Thomas, and they tended to shift it around and I think use their resources very, very sensibly in that way.
Yeah, and they won the race, and that's what they set out to do. And they, Team Sky, have won the Tour 3 years out of 4. I mean, that's a really remarkable record for them.
Not bad, right? Let's wait for the riders. They'll be here soon, I think, Lionel. And we'll carry on this as live podcast on the Place de la Concorde.
You are listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar, with Rich and Moore, Lionel Burney, and Daniel Fripp.
Lionel, we're entering the closing stages of the final stage of the 2015 Tour de France. The riders have been whizzing past us on the Champs-Élysées. We're on the Place de la Concorde with all the teams still.
Who's going to win, though, Rich? That's the main thing. Who's going to win?
Well, Mark Cavendish, we understand, has been pretty ill the last few days. Brian Holm is nearby. We might ask him how he's been. Who's going to win? I mean, it's going to be tight, I think. I think Christoph, Greipel, Sagan, Cavendish. Difficult to call between those. Brian Cockar.
I think I'm going to go for Christoph. Just, we'll see, won't we? We'll find out very shortly.
Sagan would be a popular win, and we've just given a Pedlar de Charme t-shirt to his press officer, who's promised to hand it on and get a picture of him wearing it. So look out, Twitter, for that. So Lionel, if you're going to go, then I'm going to say cheerio.
Cheerio, Rich. Yeah, that's it. That's the Tour de France 2015. I mean, you're getting the Eurostar. I've got to get the Jaguar back home. I'm stuck in an underground car park. Not entirely sure that I'll get out until the Tour de France clears out of town. I could be stuck down there for hours. That's the big problem. Will I ever emerge from
in a subterranean hell?
Yeah, it's not nice down there, is it? It's an underground car park in Paris and it smells of all sorts of things. So yeah, but that's it. The end of the Tour de France. It's been fantastic, hasn't it? We've had a great 3 weeks on the road. Can't wait to do it all again next year.
We'll take a little break now from the podcast and resume in a couple of weeks, I think, once we've recharged our batteries.
Absolutely, yeah. In the meantime, go back and listen to any of the Kilometre Zero episodes you may have missed, or join the Friends of the Podcast initiative, and you can listen to our review of the tour.
Now, a few minutes ago, I caught up with Dave Brailsford, who's standing here on the Champs-Élysées with his Union Jack, recovered from the experience of watching the Alpe d'Huez stage yesterday. Here's what he had to say. So Dave, were there some nervous moments watching Alpe d'Huez yesterday?
Well, I've got to be honest, yes there was. You know, it was the longest 40 minutes of my life, I think. It's probably the most nervous and nerve-wracking kind of little bit of sport I've been involved in for a long, long time. And God, it was horrific, actually, yeah.
Because Chris obviously said that he was worried, he was tired, he was suffering, but he was aware that the gap wasn't jumping up in significant amounts, so he knew he had a cushion. But were you worried that he would collapse at some point?
I guess logically, you know, after every kilometre, I could figure out how much time, what the difference was, what the drop-off in performance would have to be, and whether that was really feasible or not. And so after every kilometre, you know, logically, it was getting more and more, you know, it would have to be a disaster, really. But emotionally, I was going crazy. Oh, God.
Where were you when you watched it?
I tried to go and watch it. We didn't have the bus at the end, so I tried to go to the finish line to watch on a big screen, but I couldn't watch it, so I just had to go and walk behind all the TV and media trucks and everything, just to pace up and down for 40 minutes, and I could just about hear the commentary in the background, and every time his voice went up, and the Le Carre Monte, oh, my God. So I just, yeah, I wasn't... Yeah, I'm not proud of that, really, but there we go. It was hell.
Does that make it all the sweeter to be here in the Champs-Élysées, poised to celebrate a third tour win in 4 years?
I think the last 48 hours, last 3 days were, you know, pretty intense, really. And I think, you know, I feel like it's kind of like you're a block of ice, you know, but you freeze and then it takes a bit of time to thaw. And once you're thawed out, you can look back and enjoy it. But, it's pretty, yeah, pretty hard couple of days, really. So, but I'm sure we crossed the line now, it'll be very satisfying and the end of a lot of work, really.
I mean, 2012, you had to race off to London to the Olympic Games. 2013 was a bit more comfortable. But are you somebody who enjoys, do you enjoy celebrating a victory like this, or are you already sort of thinking in your mind about planning for doing it again next year?
I'm not one. I wish I was, but I mean, you know, some people I talk to, they got like a firework goes off inside them and it's all great, but I just don't get that, you know, and I wish I did. I'm very, very happy, you know. I'm happy for the guys more than anything, you know, and certainly, you know, the Chris's victory has been fantastic this time, but I think it was our best tactical performance of all our victories, and so tactically and from a team point of view, by far the best performance we've put together, and that's the most pleasing thing, I think.
Finally, Dave, Daniel Freebus talked a lot on our podcast about the pendulum. It swung Chris's way on the first day in the Pyrenees, and he thought it would swing very gradually back towards Quintana. It didn't quite swing enough for him, but he's 5 years younger than Chris. Can Chris come again next year and win it a third time?
Well, I think you've got to take your hat off to Nairo, you know, and I think he rode a great race, and obviously he was very, very strong. He's a brilliant climber, lovely to watch on a bike, great racer, great attitude. But I think he's specialist in, you know, he's a specialist climber, and he's a brilliant, brilliant climber, there's no doubt about it. But I think Chris has just got the edge at the minute, that he's actually better, more versatile, he's better across different sorts of disciplines of the sport, and I think that's how he's won. But ultimately, you know, you can't not see Nairo win this race at some point in time in the future, and he's going to have so much experience now, because he was so young when he started, that when he gets it right and he puts it all together, he's going to be very, very hard to beat. But maybe not next year.
Thanks, Dave, and try and enjoy the celebrations tonight.
I'll try my best, I promise.
Well, this is a real mixture of hellos and goodbyes. It's goodbye to Lionel, and it's hello to Ciro Scognamiglio, who's just walking towards me. Ciro, hello.
Also from here, listeners in Paris, live or not live, Richard, I don't know what we are doing now.
We're dead. I think we're all dead. And Lionel's certainly dead. He said the tour has been 6 hours too long for him, so he's off home. Understandable, he's booked on the Eurotunnel tonight. A bit of a bit of chaos there, so he's off to try and get his allotted time in the tunnel. Ciro, I didn't think you'd be joining us today, but this is a bonus.
It's a bonus, but for who? For you or for me? For me, for sure.
For everybody.
So happy to be here, so happy that the Tour de France is almost finishing, but mainly so happy that more or less in 36 hours, not more, my holidays are coming, listeners.
Now, Ciro, you met somebody in a restaurant last night. Tell us about that encounter.
A really close friend of our podcast. I bumped into him in Hotel Belle Donne near Bourg-d'Oisans, near Alpe d'Huez. I must confess that I didn't see a lot of Belle Donne, nice girls, in the hotel, but there was this friend of the podcast. He was really happy, and also me. I was happy.
Excellent. Right, so Ciro, we're into the final few. He's just off. He's gone. Where's he gone? I was about to ask him a question about the cycling, but he's off. He's off to say hello to the Team Sky bus driver, by the looks of things. Oh, well, the peloton's just whizzed past. I've been left on my own now. Everyone's gone. There's Tim from Trek. Hi, Tim. Tim, how's your tour been?
It's over.
No, it's not quite over.
It's not quite over, that's true. It was all right.
Let's marks out of 10 for Trek Factory Racing. We'll tell you if they tally with ours.
You tell me. I'll let you tell.
I'll obviously exaggerate. No. No, I mean, Fabian Cancellara obviously had the yellow jersey, so that gives you a minimum of 6, I think.
Yes.
Malcolm Mollema rode solidly. You'd probably have liked a stage win.
Yes, but the goal was top 8, so we were 7th, so that's good. The goal was to win the prologue. That didn't work. We got the yellow the next day, so we got a little bit of sunshine there. But then, fortunately, the next day we lost the yellow again. So I would say 7.5.
I think that's probably close to what we awarded you. Can you give us a little update on Fabian Cancellara? How is he?
He's a little bit in the disconnected mode right now, but that's normal in his case. I mean, he can be so incredibly focused sometimes, and that's when he needs to decompress sometimes as well. So he's kind of a little bit, well, up on his mountain in Switzerland, let's say, but he'll be back.
When will we see him again?
The plan for now, I mean, this is not 100% confirmed, is probably to do Eneco. And then Vuelta. Yeah. The plan initially was to do more one-day races in the second half of the season. But, I mean, what we're looking at now would be an Eneco and Vuelta.
Great. Thanks, Tim.
You're welcome. Have
Cheers.
A nice
Enjoy
day
Enjoy the celebrations.
In Paris. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, I'm still in the Champs-Élysées. You heard there from Tim van der Jeugd, the press officer at Trek Factory Racing, giving us a little update on Fabian Cancellara. I'm going to say cheerio, and I'm going to do so in the company of Ciro, who has metamorphosed back again. He's like Will of the Wisp. He disappears. He's back. Ciro, let's do our goodbyes. This is the final moment of the 2015 Tour de France podcast.
Richard, and it's strange because I should be a man of words, you know, because I write articles. I try to tell something to my readers and to my listeners. But in a moment like this, I have no words because it's too much, my emotion, because something is finishing. But I'm sure that, I find the word now, I'm sure that this is not the end. This will be a new begin.
Excellent, Ciro. Have a wonderful holiday. Thank you for joining us. Thank you. That's Ciro off. I've got to go and catch my Eurostar now. I'm going to rush off to the Gare du Nord. I'm going to miss the finish, but unfortunately, the situation with the travel back to London is such that Lionel and I both have to miss finish. I'll be back in a moment with an update on what exactly happened in the stage. Okay, I've left the Champs-Élysées to try and get my Eurostar home, but I've managed to get into a brasserie just opposite the Gare du Nord. As I came in, somebody shouted, "What did you shout?
Where are we, Lionel?"
And I bumped into podcast listener Chris, who's been in the same conundrum as me, having to get to the Gare du Nord to catch Eurostar home before the stage is finished. So, Chris, you've agreed to join me in talking us through the final moments of the 2015 Tour de France. We're a few kilometres to go. What's going to happen?
4.5 km to go. It looks like things have dried up a little bit. Not so slippy for the riders. No breakaways so far. And I think we're expecting a traditional bunch finish on the Champs.
Hey, you're better than Daniel or Lionel.
Well, that...
You did say you said you'd had a few beers, but you sound very compos mentis to me.
Some would say that might not be too hard to be better than Daniel or Lionel. But that
was... We had a moment of drama there because Chris Froome had a plastic bag in his bike just as I was coming in. He was changing bikes. Did you see what happened?
I didn't see that, I'm afraid. I did see him change his jersey and his jacket about 6 times on the run into Paris, but no, well,
you know, you can never,
right, I'm sure
you never get your clothes right in Paris, can you? It is a very fashionable city. Right, let's watch the final couple of kilometres and come back for the final sprint. So, Chris, you've just told me you rode here to Paris.
Yeah, we rode London to Paris with work over the last 4 days, 300 miles in 4 days, a lot of fun, but... not a patch on what the boys are doing over the last 3 weeks.
Chris, if I'm not much mistaken, there was somebody standing in the middle of the road there as the riders came through. We're 2 kilometres to go. I'm not quite sure what happened there, but we've had the camera focusing on Peter Sagan, on Mark Cavendish there, who, as I mentioned earlier when I was still with Lionel, he's been ill apparently. Chris Froome is safely there. But, you know, it's all done and dusted for him. It's just up to the sprinters now. We're entering the final... We're coming up to the final kilometre. Who's going to get this?
Giant Alpecin starting to form a bit of a train. I'm hoping for Cav. Sagan, I fancy, for the top five, as you do. Fingers crossed for Cav. But Greipel got to be a favourite, given everything that's happened the last couple of weeks.
Well, Lotto Soudal did look especially organised there, although they seem to have been... swamped a little bit. There are no teams in control. It's all a bit chaotic, a bit messy. They'll be emerging from the tunnel soon and coming across the Place de la Concorde very soon, all the way along the Rue de Rivoli, then across the Place de la Concorde. Can Cavendish do it? Let's see. We're well inside the final kilometre now, Chris. A bit of shoulder barging. There's a big crash there as well. Someone on the ground, Trek Factory racing rider on the ground, looked badly hurt. But they're coming across the Place de la Concorde now. It's all very close. Peter Sagan is third wheel. He's won the fight for third wheel. They're around the final corner. Alexander Kristoff is there as well. Edvald Boasenhagen is there. There's Kristoff going now.
Sagan, Kristoff. I don't see Cav at all. Hopefully he's going to appear from nowhere, as he traditionally does. Greipel looking good.
Greipel's coming right. Greipel's got it. Here comes Brian Cockard as well, friend of the podcast, Greipel. Brian Cockard. Greipel, what a tour he's had. Described by the Cycling Podcast as a fading force on the eve of the tour, which has proved us wrong.
Three stages he's won, and you described him as a fading force.
Oh, it shows you how good we are at calling things. Well, there we are. That's it. The 2015 tour is done and dusted. Andre Greipel's won in the Champs-Élysées. Didn't see Mark Cavendish, didn't see Peter Sagan. Alexander Kristoff almost got it. Brian Cockard came close. His mother was on the Champs-Élysées earlier. In fact, a listener of the podcast bumped into Brian Cockard's mother, tweeted a photograph of her, told her all about the Brian Cockard t-shirts that we sell.
Gave
so
her
that was
a t-shirt,
nice.
I hope. Gave her a t-shirt, I hope.
No, we didn't give her a t-shirt. No, the budget doesn't extend to that. We've used our budget on giving out Pedlar de Charme t-shirts. Chris, would you like to nominate Pedlar de Charme for today?
I would like to nominate Malcolm Patterson as Pedlar de Charme today for buying me a couple of beers in an Irish pub just off the Champs-Élysées.
Okay, I'm not sure he qualifies, but we'll let you have that one. Chris, thank you very much for finishing off the 2015 Tour de France podcast with me. That was very kind of you.
Thank you, Richard.